All right. Thank you, everybody, for coming along today. Thank you for finding the time to come to the last session when a lot of people have headed off for their first beer of the evening. I hope that everybody's had a good first day at TechEd. So my name is Derek Moyer. I'm a business manager at Citrix Systems. With me today, I have Danny Newport. Danny Newport is one of my technical specialists. I'll let Danny introduce himself.
Okay. So I'm, as Derek said, I'm his systems engineer at Citrix Systems. So my sole role at Citrix is to focus on our business and our relationship with Microsoft from a technical perspective. So a bit of history about me. I've been a consultant, or was a consultant prior to being at Citrix, for around about 10 or 11 years, and started at Citrix last December in this role, focusing solely on Citrix as a consultant. So a lot of the Microsoft specialist stuff is new and interesting. New and interesting.
So yeah, as Danny said, Danny's role is to focus on Microsoft technologies. Me, myself, I also do that. Success to us is looking at our products and how they work in the Microsoft stack. So what that means is Zen Desktop, Zen App running on Hyper-V. It's about integration with System Center and the tools. So we're going to talk about some of that today. But first, I want to get some good news out of the way. If you all fill in your forms and put down your mobile numbers on your forms and hand them in at the end of the session, we're going to do a draw tomorrow at the stand, and we're going to text the person that is the lucky winner of this Garmin GPS. Hopefully, it'll be able to help you find your way home from the party tomorrow night to your hotel room. So hopefully. So not a bad little device. Nice and easy and quite small. So let's get underway. So this session today is going to focus predominantly on Zen App 6.5. We're actually quite lucky because in the last week, we've actually just done a release of quite a few of our products, a dot release of quite a few of our products, Zen App 6.5 and Zen Desktop 5.5. We've done some updates to the receiver product. So we're going to go through some of these changes and some of the additions that we've got here. We're really focusing on application delivery. And so Zen App 6.5, these are a couple of marketing slides that we have just to sort of set the scene. And I'm just going to step out of the lights. These are a couple of marketing slides that we have to set the scene, talking predominantly around how Zen App is the delivery application mechanism. It's the chosen mechanism that we're seeing in the industry today for delivery of applications on demand. What do we mean by on demand? We mean fast. We're not talking about installing those applications into your operating system, but we're talking about getting access to those applications from any device, be it a tablet, a smartphone, or a PC, any type or flavor of operating system that sits underneath that, and deliver that quickly to you. All in all, at the back, we've also been working very, very hard to simplify the management and the structure of this of Zen App so that it's easier for you guys to administer it in your own environments. So these are some of the things that we're going to show you as we drive through today. We wanted to highlight this one particular component, which is Microsoft App V. And I'm sure everybody's reasonably familiar with that being a Microsoft event. We work very closely with Microsoft on this. Zen App is actually integrates quite closely with App V. Our receiver products integrate quite closely with App V. The beauty of this is it gives you the ability to package your applications once and deploy many different times. Right, so deploy into App V, sorry, into Zen App, or into your desktop, or into a virtual desktop for that matter. So this is probably the most common question that we get at Citrix, right? So why do I need in Zen App over RDS, right? So what's the difference between Zen App and RDS? And just make sure everybody knows RDS is the newer version of Terminal Server. I'm pretty sure everybody's got that, but I'll put that straight. I'll give you 10 reasons that we pretty much come back with. It's any device, any endpoint. The receiver client will actually run on any type of operating system. In actual fact, we support over a billion different devices. Any network, we've done so much work. And 20-plus years of development is very difficult to work with and very difficult to beat. This is where you see the ICA architecture really come into its own and HDX and being able to deliver a really good experience over highly latent links. And this is stuff that we focused on in Zen App 6.5 to work better with highly latent links over mobile networks, wireless networks. And one of the things we wanted to show you today, but we had some technical challenges with the video, was how Flash works and how well that works. But we won't be showing that. Profile management. We've gone that step further about being able to deliver user-based profiles and being able to deliver better profile integration for your users so that your users get a very good, very personalized user experience in Zenapp today. Policies around how we do power management, how we can trickle users off a Zenapp box, take them off, drain them away, and shut that Zenapp box down and give you a green type environment. We do this through our policies. Like I mentioned earlier, multimedia, being able to rip in and do webcam support, lots of different mics and USB headsets and the like, and being able to have a good flash type experience, YouTube if you like. Session roaming, if you could picture, for example, a doctor in a hospital moving from a terminal to a terminal, we've worked very, very hard to be able to enable that through things like smart card integration. Doctor works on one workstation, moves to the next floor in the hospital, plugs his smart card in, and bang, he's back into his same session. High-end graphics, working with the CAD type applications so that people, like on a workshop floor, can have a thin client and a monitor and be able to read detailed architectural diagrams. Taking legacy Windows XP apps, although most of you are probably still running XP, but legacy Windows XP apps and being able to drop them onto your 2008 infrastructure, or for that matter, your Windows 7 infrastructure. Integration with system management tools like SCCM, being able to deliver a Zenapp application out over SCCM. So being able to publish an application from SCCM, just like you do when you normally install an application, but actually having that application delivered via Zenapp. And then we have a self-service capability where we have a portal which is integrated into Receiver and being able to let the user self-provision and bring down apps as they require them. So these are the things that we're going to try and show you today. We're going to walk through over it. So what is really new in Zenapp 6.5 and Zenapp 5.5? It's, as I mentioned earlier on, it's access from over 1 billion devices. We've really extended our capability with Receiver, and by that I mean really bumped up the actual capability of what your experience is like on probably the lesser known platforms out there. We've worked hard to give you a much richer multimedia experience, Link, for example, so you can do video conferencing and audio over a Zenapp session. We've worked very, very hard, and one of the things we're probably most excited about is actually seeing applications launch with streaming fast app launch. So we've actually done some work so that when you launch an application now, when we show you, you're going to be quite surprised at how quickly we can actually launch an application. Single point of control. So we've done a lot of work around management. And then this last point down here, if you're in the hosting business, we've done a lot of work around increasing our scalability and being able to allow you to platform this and deliver this out in like a hosting type environment and reduce your costs. So here are the new features. There's quite a few. I'm not really going to read through them, but these are the new features that you'll see, and these are the stuff that we're going to talk through. As I said, a huge support for multiple devices. These are the individual experiences that you're going to get. This is the stuff that we focused on from a user perspective. And over here, this is the stuff that we focused on from a management perspective. So we've really worked on both sides of the fence, what the users feel and see, so they get a more personalized experience, much more like a desktop experience, but in the same respect, giving the other guys at the back end an ability to better manage.
Okay, so Receiver, I think we've pretty much covered Receiver off. The 3 times faster performance. So with the ICA protocol, what we've done now is we've made enhancements to both the protocol at the server end and enhancements to the Receiver, which sits on the client, that it's multi-streaming and multi-threaded now. So it processes the information, gets it in and out a lot faster. So it does result in a far better user experience. I'll take you through. We've actually put in an option with multi-streaming ICA, which we'll cover off shortly, and I'll take you through and show you how we configure that and tell you what that's all about as well. And advanced Linux device support. So we can offload multimedia and flash and things like that to Linux devices now. So yes, we support more devices, but now we support more features on more devices as well. So it just gets better for the users. You're not limited to your device choice, nor are your users. You can drop. Screaming at fast launch. Now, This is pretty cool. Obviously, I've been playing with it quite a bit, setting up the demo for the session, and this is one of the coolest things I've seen in quite a while, actually. So I'm not going to talk that much to the slide. I mean, it's got a pretty little graphic that draws some lines. What I'll do is I'll talk you more through it when I jump over to the demo, because it makes a little bit more sense when you see it. But basically what happens is users log on to their desktops in an enterprise. A session will pre-launch on a server, given certain constraints and triggers. That session sits there for a predetermined amount of time. That's configurable by the administrator and just waits to be connected to by a user. So when a user clicks on that application icon to launch it, it goes bang. There's no session starting, creation, waiting, here's your profile, all that kind of stuff. It's already waiting to be connected to on the server. So it does result in a really, really good user experience. Streamed apps and shared VHDs for instant startups as well. So for app streaming, we mount a shared VHD, which can be shared across, obviously shared, it's shared across multiple users. Less data traversing WANs and storage and all that kind of stuff. And again, streaming apps start like that as well. So we've done a lot of work on what the users see and feel. Okay, this is my... I'll just make a comment on session linger as well. So I'll show two things. So there's session pre-launch and there's session linger. So I'll, instead of talking to slides, I'll switch over to the other machine. Okay, demo machine. So I've logged on here as Joe Average User. Down in the corner here, you can see the receiver icon. So the receiver auto logs on using whatever credentials I happen to have logged on to my network with. Receiver auto logs on. So at that point, an administrator can decide how this... There's two ways to trigger this session pre-launch. It can be done as soon as receiver logs on, so it'll log on and then trigger the pre-launch, or you can schedule it. So if you're running virtual desktops instead of a notebook or something, if you're like me with my virtual desktop, I don't log off my virtual desktop that often. So having a session pre-launch on log-on probably wouldn't suit my virtual desktop that well. So I'd have it scheduled to maybe pre-launch at 8:30 in the morning. So when I come in at 9, my session's ready to start without me having to log off, log on, that kind of stuff. So you can pick and choose how you do that. So this is auto-logged on. I've got the, for those of you familiar with ZenApp, this is the connection center. So as you can see, I have no ZenApp applications running, but I have a connection to a server with no applications sitting below it. So if I just run Word, for example, boom, that's how fast. You can see it turns up under here, but that's how fast ZenApp apps start now. That's ridiculous, isn't it?
That's great.
That is sick. And in a good way, a really good way. When I was setting this up, I thought, you know what, this sounds really cool, but it looks way cooler than it sounds. So that's session pre-launch. It's crazy, crazy. We call it, as you saw, screaming fast app launch, and it really is. So what session linger is, if I close this down, okay, so I've closed my app. So go back into Connection Center, everything's gone. Okay, my connection to the server is gone for all intents and purposes. But what session linger is, and again, this is all configurable via the policy, that session will stay ready to be connected to on the server like that. Now, so I'll launch Word again. Oh, look at that, it dropped it. Demo gods.
I'd like to highlight that we are running a Hyper-V server on a laptop with ZenApp
live
as
demos.
A virtual machine sitting underneath.
Maybe
that.
I didn't configure that quite right. So what session linger does is it holds that session open on the server, and you can configure, I think I configured like a 10-minute session linger, but maybe I didn't. Maybe they should have configured that longer, but it leaves it to be connected to. Now, in ZenApp 6 and all previous versions, what happened with a reconnection was when you start that session like I did just then, it has to set up a temporary session, look for any existing sessions, and then swap it over and reconnect that session and then drop the temporary session.
It's broken.
So we've dropped the whole need to do that now. So what happens is as soon as you start that, there's no temporary session required. It just looks for the unique ID of the previous session and just logs you straight into that one.
Thank you.
So that was session pre-launch and session lingering.
Yeah.
Yep. So how does profile management work with the session not logging off, lingering for a while? I guess that depends on what profile management tools and so UPM does write back at set intervals, right? So you don't actually have to log off completely for UPM to write back your profile changes. So that can handle that. You don't lose anything, and your session's not going to be rudely disconnected and just dropped. It will do a graceful log off once that timeout period's been exceeded.
Okay, I just want to... another question?
Okay, so as Derek said, last week we released NAP 6.5. There is a new receiver 3.0 that's downloadable. It either comes on the media or you can download that separately from the web. You need that. So the bit where you configure whether or not it's it pre-launches on logon or you do a scheduled one, that's a client-side change. And I would manage that by group policy preferences. There's two registry keys you can mess with to figure out how that works, a user one and a machine one. I'll do that by GPPs. Yeah, that's a really good question. So the question is, what happens to server resources? Clearly, the two things happen. Yes, you're using server resources, so when you're pre-launching sessions, server resources are utilized. Also, licenses are checked out. So you're consuming a license and you're using more resource on your server. So I'll show you in the Zenapp console how you can determine what happens and what sessions pre-launch. You actually have to deliberately, like when you publish an application, you create a pre-launch application for that application. So it's not just across the board on everything, doesn't set up another session ready to connect you to for everything. You can determine how many of those actually occur.
Do you want to shut that down? Or do you want to show up now or not? I can do this.
No, you.
It's up to you. All right, while Danny brings that up, I'll just jump on to the next slide while he's just going through that. Right. So everybody's familiar with Flash. It's probably the most commonly used video format on the internet. I'm sure we've all spent some time in YouTube at some point or another having a giggle. We've done a lot of work around how we give Flash capabilities out. I can tell a very true story where we had a customer who had chosen a different solution. Their manager was interviewed on ABC TV, came back, jumped on his website in his session to view himself on ABC TV, and he couldn't. And we were called in the next day. So as a result, you know, the work that we've done around this and the way that we deliver this has been critical in giving the users the best experience. And it's really about giving the users the best experience, and that's what we focus on. So we've gone to a Generation 2. So everybody's familiar with HDX, I'm hoping. So we've gone to Generation 2 for Flash redirection. So we've actually added a whitelist option, which I think is actually a great feature. So if you actually don't want them to go to YouTube, then we can actually stop that and we can control that capability. We've got some intelligent fallback capability within the client. So and in my next slide, I'm going to explain how we actually do the Flash rendering and how we look at that. But what we can do now is if we actually start to have a Flash session running and it doesn't seem to be working so well, then we can actually fall that back to the server. We've added device support for Linux clients, or better support for Linux clients, as Danny mentioned before. So just this is the important part for us around Flash. It's far more than a protocol, right? So we inspect the server, we inspect our network, and we inspect our endpoint. At that point, we make a decision, right? If it's possible to render Flash on the end device, and this is really what I wanted to show you, but it's a bit hard with multiple networks in the room, we'll actually render and run the Flash video on the local client device. If it's not so good, we'll fall back to the server, we'll render it on the server, and we'll, using the actual HDX protocol, we'll drop down the bits that we need to do that. And we've done that through being able to break this down. from the testing that we've seen from people like Login VSI and the likes, we're getting 90% less bandwidth than competitive solutions on the market today. So what does that mean? If you look at things like how hard it is to do things versus how hard it is across a network type, this is the sort of, and I don't really need to speak to this, you can sort of, you can understand this quite easily, right? So just plain old everyday database. This is a little bit older than before RemoteFX was released, so we do see some differences there around the RDP with RemoteFX, but basically, you know, you can really see that, you know, HDX is really spanning out, and this goes back to that 20 years plus of development that we've done. Do you want to go back and show them the capability of that now?
I'll show all the consoles at the same time, probably.
Okay.
Do you want to switch to the next one?
Yeah. Yep. Do you want to talk to
printing? Printing optimization. We've done quite a lot of work, and there's still obviously a lot of work to be done. So printing is like a three-year project for Citrix. It's been going probably in earnest a year and a half, maybe 2 years already. So last year we released some enhancements to printing. There was a printing enhancement pack that came out where via policy you can configure how your print jobs are managed and you know, your DPI and black and white and all that kind of stuff, and made an enormous difference. So with the 6.5 release, we've made more improvements again to printing. So as you can see here, using 10% of current bandwidth requirements is pretty huge. It means your network doesn't get hit as hard. It means your print jobs come out faster. It means your users are more productive because they're not waiting for stuff to come out all the time. I mean, as I said, I've been consulting in the Citrix space for over a decade now, and I know printing has been one of the biggest pain in the asses out of everything for Citrix. And there are heads nodding and stuff. We know that, and that's why we're doing this, right? It's making a huge, huge difference. Creates new printer sessions in seconds, and you can plug in printers on the fly if you've got USB ones and whatever. Picks it up in your session. You don't have to log off, log back on, or reconnect, disconnect, all that kind of stuff. It just picks it all up now. So it makes a big, big, big difference. So hopefully all that difference for you guys means happier users that complain less, ring up less, that kind of stuff. Multi-audio support for plug and play. This is interesting. I looked at this one and I thought, huh? I don't get it. But there's actually really good use cases for this. So multiple speakers are supported, being passed through into Zenapp sessions. Multiple microphones are supported. That's the one that had me confused. Going, how many people are going to look at this at once?
Call centers.
Call centers, there you go. It opens up a lot more options in call centers. So we did have another slide in there somewhere. So, for example, call center operators can have the phone ringing on one set of speakers and can be listening to or talking to users and interacting on the other set of speakers, for example. Just simple things like that. So we've done all this stuff based on feedback from customers. I guess there's not people out there just doing things because it sounds cool. There's actually a really good reason for that. So.
Well, what we're finding from our customers is, from a business perspective, I don't want to say outsourcing because that's not the right word, but call center overflow is something that they're looking at. I think it's a much better terminology as well. So, and what they really don't want to do is they don't want to put their infrastructure into an overflow center, which is essentially a center available for multiple users. So they're actually really coming to us and looking at how they can use that overflow center. I was almost about to say call center. That overflow center's work environment, their internet connection, to get back into their business, yet still have a safe, secure environment. We're finding that Zenapp is being used heavily here, which is why we've done a lot of work around that. If you actually look at a lot of the telcos, both here and particularly around the world, they're actually using our technology for this. So that's why this work has sort of been driven this way. Danny?
Switch next. Okay, there's lots of stuff listed in this table. I guess one of the takeaways from this table is Zen Desktop 5.5 and Zenapp 6.5 are still different in terms of some of the things they can do. Typically, as a rule of thumb, Zen Desktop's more advanced than Zenapp still in terms of its HDX features and some of its performance as well. Some of that's due to the platform it's sitting on. One's Windows 7, one's a server platform, and the other, I guess, is probably due to Zen Desktop being our flagship product and getting a lot more focus. So things like frames per second for video and things like that, I mean, as you can see, they are both configurable up to the same maximums, but there are differences and reasons why you probably wouldn't do that on Zenapp, given that you're sharing the environment with a lot of other people and reducing scalability as a result.
We've really thrown these up partly to give you the technical differences, but also to help you really understand in your businesses when you're looking at it why you would pick one over the other, right? So, or why you would use one or the other is probably a better way to explain it.
Yep. Another one, and this is more where the platform comes into it, is the HDX plug and play USB device support. So as you can see, pretty much everything that's detected by a Windows 7 operating system as a USB device is passed through into your Zen desktop session. But Zen App is still kind of limited to portable USB devices like thumb drives and, I guess, headsets and things like that. Speakers. Oh, there we go. USB keyboards, mice, printers, that kind of stuff. Switch to the next. Adaptive display is largely limited to Zen Desktop 5.5, and we do have a slide, I think, on adaptive orchestration. I think we've left it in. I'm not going to read through them all. As you can see, there are differences. You guys can read differences in them. But having said that, they... Both ridiculously good.
So, and just to sort of hold the ground, you can see the slight changes that we've made between ZenApp 6.5 and ZenApp 6. And in particular, you can see that we've focused on the QoS of the HDX or the ICA infrastructure, so you can actually use QoS now as part of that. We've done a fair bit of work around policies in that space as well.
Okay, this is the multi-stream ICA I was talking about. So what we've done is we've actually, this isn't enabled by default, but you can enable splitting out the ICA stream into multiple ICA streams. So everyone knows port 1494 and port 2598 have been around for quite a long time now in the Citrix space. It's going to change again. So now when you split it out, you obviously need to do that over multiple ports because there are multiple TCP connections going across the wire now. The good thing about that, in fact, there are no bad things about that. One of the good things about that is quality of service. You can now go, I want this stream to be real time, I want this to be low priority, and that can be your printing and bulk traffic and that kind of stuff. You can do normal network stuff within the ICA stack now, which is really kind of cool. And you whack our branch repeater technology on top of that, and you've got screaming fast networks and screaming fast app launches, and people are screaming everywhere. In a good way, in a good way. UDP audio, you'll see that's a new thing. We haven't done UDP before. So we're splitting out UDP into an audio stream. Again, that's not on by default. You can configure it. But it's more real-time now. So if you're doing Link OCS or something like that, you're now getting real time because there was some getting out of sync with audio and video before. So with UDP audio, it's more real time, better performance. It's kind of how most voice traverses and networks anyway.
So Danny's going to show you a bit
about. So clearly on a laptop I can't show you how great it is traversing a network, but I will show you where you configure this stuff and what it looks like. So switch to 3. So while I've got that up there, this is the App Center. We've changed the name of the management console again because we do that. You can see for Excel, you can see that, yeah. You can see for Excel, PowerPoint, and Word, I have created a pre-launch application. So it doesn't happen by default. So what you do to create one of those is you highlight your application, right-click, other tasks, create pre-launch application. So you don't have to do that for all your applications. If you just want one to pre-launch because people always start Outlook first thing in the morning, just create one for Outlook or whatever. I mean, you'll work it out as you go, but you don't have to do it in bulk across the board and have, as you were saying, lots and lots of server resources taken up for no good reason. Also, the way to manage how many sessions get started up, everyone doesn't have to have it happen because, as I said, you can configure it. Because it's a client-side configuration, you can push down group policy preferences to go, this group always gets pre-launched. Like, the execs get stuff starting fast all the time, right? Because you would do that. I would. You want your job, you would, right?
Unless you want hardware.
Unless you want more hardware and go, it's running really slow, I need more bugs. More bugs. But using, obviously, group policy preferences, you can filter out who gets that pre-launch, who does, when it happens, when it doesn't, that kind of stuff. So, yes, it uses more resources and more licenses, but not for everyone. So that's that. What was I doing? HDX. So
HDX.
I'll just quickly switch back to this. You'll see there's a node called policies inside of the ZenApp console. That's been there for a long time. We've always done policies. That's what it looks like. If you're doing proofs of concept and you can't get access to Active Directory, this is the way to configure the environment, right? Because you can go nuts on it. In an enterprise, this is how you do it. Group policy. So as you can see, you need to manage this from a ZenApp server, by the way, so you actually see these snap-ins. So where's snap-ins to group policy? If I highlight this, it looks just like what I saw in the other console. I'll just highlight this and make it bigger so we can see. Highlight active settings. You can see there's a multi-port policy and multi-stream. Multi-stream's easy. It's a, is it on or is it off? This is where you turn on, decide whether to split out your ICA stream into multi-streams or you don't. This is off by default. Multi-port policy, you can choose your ports, which is really cool. I can change these port numbers. I just decided to increment from 2598. This whole splitting out is dependent on session reliability being turned on, which is why I started from 2598 and counted up, not 1494 and counted up. So session reliability has to be on for this to work. You can make these ports any number you want. It doesn't have to be sequential. It's just a number of ports, really. As you can see, the ports, you can choose whether it's very high, low, medium, that kind of stuff, and that ties straight into your QoS policies as well, which is kind of cool, I think. So that's, I can't show you it traversing a network. That's pretty much it in terms of media stream policies. I'm going to switch back here.
Okay, so one of you, I think everybody's probably used to the old terminal services interface, and one of the challenges that we always had was, people would have an XP desktop, for example, with a nice green button to start, and then we'd give them terminal services or ZenApp, and they get an interface that looks like that, and it looked nothing like what they have on their desktop, and so they didn't get that same experience. So, that was that's been addressed through 2008 with the user experience, which you get, which gives you a much richer definition. So one of the things that I want to highlight about ZenApp, and I think it hasn't taken anybody in this room very long to work out that I'm the sort of the sales guy and Danny's the brains, is I actually installed this and I can make this actually on myself very, very easily, and it took me like 5 minutes because it's a role that we enable when we actually install ZenApp. So what we're doing is essentially we're giving them this experience, right? So we've moved from that. And we've given them a much better personalization experience. We've given them Windows Media capability, high-resolution wallpapers. I don't have to read from the slides. You can see the capabilities. I think what it really addresses, though, is it's that component back to the user. How does that user feel when they're in a terminal server environment? So many of these people go, but it's not the same as that person there. Well, now it is, and it's really, really difficult to actually do that. So I'm just going to skip just to the next slide just for a second. And if you actually look at this, there's only really one difference. That's the icon there. Right. So you can't really tell the difference between those two environments.
Except for the user icon picture.
Ah, yes.
Does anyone know why the user icon is always a flower by default in Windows 7? What's up with that? Flower.
It's green. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to get Danny just to jump in and show you actually how this works and how this looks.
Okay. There's not a lot to this. It's really simple. Close that. That's it. It's a ZenApp server desktop looking like a Windows 7 desktop. As you can see, we've got the flower. As Derek said, this is enabled via a role. I wasn't going to jump in here, but this, you've been able to, desktop experience has been in Windows Server 2008 for a little while, obviously. But now what we've done is we've actually included it in the Zen app install process. You don't have to remember to go back and do this and go, oh crap, my desktop looks rubbish and I'll have to go back and enable another role and then change stuff and enable themes and all that kind of stuff. If I go to remove server roles, maybe add server roles and let's me... Yeah, see, this is why I wasn't going to do it, because I don't have the ISO mounted for it to go in and look at the media. So, needless to say, during the install process, you select desktop experience. It's a tick box. It installs the desktop experience role. It enables the themes service. The desktop wallpaper doesn't come up by default, but you can put any high-res wallpaper you want in there, but this one, the Citrix Enhanced Desktop one, comes fitted for you. And it's branded Citrix, so it's good. Oh, it looks kind of cool, I thought.
So I've actually been at Citrix now for just on a year, and I've spent the last seven at Microsoft. And, I've lived through, I did a lot in the systems management business, so I lived through, you know, trying to install SCOM or MOM, and it's, you didn't have this MDAC version, please go and download it, and I don't know where it is, but you need to download it. And it was really difficult. This experience is really, really easy. It'll actually go and install the applications, and we actually pre-package all that information on the CD, or the right tools on the CD.
Yeah, I don't know how many of you guys have installed any of our products recently, like XenApp, Zen Desktop, or the latest provisioning services as well. You used to have to go, you'd start the install, I would, because I don't read instructions, and you'd start the install process and go, oh, you're missing this prerequisite. Oh, crap, you have to go and let either enable .NET or download this or that. Now, the install process covers everything off. If you have to enable server roles or download prereqs or anything that's required, just comes with it. You go next, 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 done. Walk away, come back a few minutes later, you're finished. So it's really good for admins that don't read admin guides.
Don't feel alone. I don't think there's anyone in the room that reads the manual first, no. Is there? Put your hand up if you do. Okay, liar. He works for Citrix, he's a liar. And not because he works for Citrix, sorry. Just clear that up. All right. Okay, so we've done a bit of work on management as well, and one of the things that we've actually done is exposing how the HDX protocol works in the Desktop Director product. So we can't show you this today, but we can on the stand, so please swing past and have a look. The Desktop Director is a component that comes. It's a help desk tool. It's there to enable you to actually inspect and look at individual sessions. It's something different to EdgeSight, if you're familiar with EdgeSight. So, and what it does is it gives you that capability to go away and have a look at what the HDX experience is like. So you can see that just over here. It's a bit hard. Please do come past the stand and we can show you that. It's actually quite a good tool for diagnosing. It's a portal. Okay, this is a management portal. It's a point for you to go and actually look and get information. It's not your configuration tool. It's a portal, and it's a very, very powerful tool.
Yeah, so just to add to Desktop Director, Desktop Director first arrived on the scene in the release of Zen Desktop 5.0. It's a Zen Desktop product, or was. So the Zen Desktop and Zen App lines are coming closer and closer together. So now Desktop Director includes support and integration for Zen App. So Desktop Director is a web-based console, as you can see just up there. It's not an MMC snap-in like the config, like the admin tool is. So the idea behind that is with data center, it's called outsourcing or call center overflow. They usually don't reside inside of your network, right? So MMC consoles are not going to work for people like that, which is why Director is a web-based console. So multiple customer environments can be managed by the one console, by the one web server. They log in using certain domain credentials and see a certain set of results based on wherever they happen to log in as. So having that Zen App support is really, really cool. And it's easy troubleshooting. They can log into there and go, my flash doesn't work, and they can go, yeah, it's your client device, you need to upgrade your flash player or something like that. You don't have a plugin, or you're actually logged onto a device that doesn't support it. You run an iPad or something like that, right? You can see it's really graphic. There's a little exclamation mark there going, you've got a problem. Well, you can drill down into that, it'll tell you what the problem is.
Well, you've got a cheap ISP who's like not something. Giving you very much bandwidth. Can we go to the next slide?
Move on.
Yeah. So one of the things we wanted to do was we wanted to show you power and capacity configuration. So it's a very difficult thing to show on a laptop because it's not really a server.
Yeah, I've got one laptop and one Zen App server and one Hyper-V host. So power and capacity management, is a bit of a moot point because you can't move stuff around to make it, you know, better performance or to power a server down to, say, power or something, but you get the idea behind it. Another really cool reason why you might want to do something like this is our SCCM connector. Now, I don't know how many of you know that exists or have had a look at that, but with the SCCM connector, as Derek said earlier, we can publish AppV streams or MSI packages straight out of SCCM into XenApp servers, and it now supports SCOM as well. So you have to have PCM installed and configured to do that, because if you want to patch your XenApp servers using SCOM or install an application, you can't do it while users are logged on, right?
Just go to the next slide and it sort of shows them a graphic of that.
So. There you go. I didn't know that slide existed. So I'll just continue saying what I was saying. So what happens is when you push updates out of SCCM to XenApp, Power Capacity Manager goes, great, we need to update, so I'm going to start draining one of the servers. It'll prevent logons, and as users log on and log off, it's not going to boot them off, and you can't. It's not like a virtual server like a Hyper-V where you can migrate a session. It will just log on, log off, and it'll empty your server out. It'll go, cool, I've got an empty one. I'll install my stuff, reboot it, mark that server as active, mark another one as inactive, and it'll start draining over there, and it'll keep doing that until all your servers are patched. So it's kind of cool.
The beauty of this is we've also extended the capability. So in XenApp 6, we only were doing it on Xen server, and we're now at a point where we do it with Hyper-V and that other one.
Yeah. So PCM can manage all three hypervisors now. It can power down hosts just whichever hypervisor they're running on, whereas the previous release couldn't do that.
Correct. Thanks.
So am I going forward or back for the...
Back.
So as much as I can't show you it working because I've only got one host and one XenApp server, that's power and capacity management. Oh, you saw a flash. How about if I switched over? This is what the console looks like. It's actually pretty straightforward. There's a little bit of configuration done here to go, yeah, I'm connected to this host, so a little bit of cluster management. You can set primary and secondary sites if you've got data center failover, all that kind of stuff. A little bit of really basic configuration with some metrics to say, well, this is my optimal server load when it gets to that, so to start draining sessions onto another server. And there's a XenApp policy configuration as well, so you have to enable it in policy before you get the pretty colors and graphs to come up like that. So this is a really good place. It's not why the product was designed, but it's actually a really good place to go and look at your utilization of your environment, because this is sitting there collecting data about how heavily utilized your servers are, how often people log on, log off, all that kind of stuff. So you can actually start running reports out of this when it's been running for a while and get some really good data on what's happening to your XenApp environment, which is actually not really available anywhere else unless you drill down into really cool edge site reports. But this is a simple way to do it.
You can see how simple it is to use, and what we've done is we've really focused on that to enable it to be easier for you guys to actually just get on and do your operational job as you do on a normal day.
Yeah, as you can see, I've got system power management not turned on. If I selected my Contoso workloads, it's not power managed. So I just want to power manage. Enable load consolidation. So that's now enabled. It's actually that simple. If I want to start power managing servers, you can enable power management. But you need credentials to do that to shut down hosts, and I'm running all this on a host, so I don't want to start doing things like that. But you can see how really simple it is to set up, and you just let it sit there and collect data, and the more data it collects and the longer it's been there, the better it gets. It's kind of PCM.
Okay, so we've been talking about hosted shared, and so I just wanted to sort of... We're going to talk a little bit about Xen Desktop and a new capability that we're introducing into it. But just before we do that, we just wanted to talk just briefly about desktop virtualization and what desktop virtualization is to Citrix. It's not just VDI, right? It's not just XenApp. It's a whole gamut. Danny, can you just build it out? Hosted shared provides you your best TCO, so your traditional XenApp type environment. If you want to have a secure and a personal environment, we have hosted VDI. That's Xen Desktop. If you want to do like streamed VDI, we have a capability fantastic for labs, schools, where we actually stream down desktops. So you do a Pixie boot up, and we start to stream down an image of your operating system, right? Very similar to AppV. And then finally, we have the ability to do offline VDI, if you like, as a terminology that's being coined. But basically, it's about having a client-side hypervisor and being able to run a virtual guest and replicate your configuration changes back up to a central server so you can move around. Do you want to go to the next stage? So really, to us, desktop virtualization is more than just this. So hosted shared, 500-odd users we can get up to. And these are testing that we've done. Hosted VDI, 150 users. If anybody wants to challenge that, I can show you some reports of where we've actually done stuff like this. Stream VHD, 3,000 users. It's a LAN-based technology, but you can get up to 3,000 users per server streaming that image out. Right, next one. Local VM runs locally, online or offline. Gives them the ability to run their VM in a plane, if you like. Right, but really what it's all about is about making sure that they get access to those applications, right? So that's really what this is all about. It's about application, right? I mean, we're all here to provide a service. That service is, my customer needs application X, let's make sure they get it.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that's what pretty much all of your jobs and our jobs, my job as when I was consulting all those years, all it really boiled down to when you think about it is getting information to users, and the way users get that information and manipulate it and use it is via applications. All of what you do, the network stuff and the SQL stuff, it's about getting applications to users so they can do their job. It's as simple as that.
Okay, so this is my favourite slide. So VDI alone really...
The ice cream slide.
Yeah, it's my ice cream slide. VDI alone really offers you just a single sort of TCO model. You're not going to get that true environment, Penny. There's a problem with that. Right, you really need more than that. You need to have more ammunition, right? And that's really about. And this is actually, if you really like, a licensing slide. So Zen Desktop provides you a licensing model that allows you to both buy Zen Desktop and Zen App, right, under the single license, and be able to pick and choose and deliver your users the environment that they need, right? And that's really what we're about. So, briefly, going to touch on Zen Desktop now. So, if we just go over, we acquired a company in the last month or so called RingCube. I don't know if anybody heard that announcement. Thank you. You know, this is true. Okay, so RingCube has been rebranded Personal VDisk, and it's actually coming out as a technology preview as part of. Zen Desktop 5.5, right? So it's available today. Mm. So we've essentially taken this code and, I guess, done a search and replace on the word RingCube with VDisk,
yeah.
And then sent it out, right? So what is it? What does it really do? So one of the things that people want is they want to have the ability to have a personalized experience in a Zen Desktop environment or a virtual desktop environment, whether that be pulled or... a static image, right? So pooled images is essentially a single infrastructure, and what we do is we provision disks on demand, virtual disks on demand for them as they come into the session versus static, which is what you give to the exec to make sure that they always have their desktop, right? Go to the next slide. Right, what we're doing is we're actually making the user's profile and their applications persistent within this virtual disk, right? This virtual disk will attach to the actual virtual VDI image that we're delivering, right? It's currently working today, and it's recognised to work with all of the industry standards from Microsoft. So it'll work with SCCM, AppV can deliver into it, and we'll show you sort of how this works. It's a bit hard, we can't demo this here today, but we can talk about it. So you know, and an assigned desktop. So this is a single desktop for the user. Each user has an operating system, which has got a base image, it's got peripherals and user installed applications. Right, it's complex. It's a high cost in a virtual desktop environment to implement in a scenario like this. Right, in a pooled desktop, they have an operating system and a common base image which we deliver out to multiple guys. But what it does is restrictive from a personalization perspective, and it really offers them a less than acceptable, I would say, not unacceptable, but it's much more IT controlled. Bastard operator from hell, if you like, image, right? So delivering that out, we're controlling that because what we're really doing is we're giving them a fresh image every time. They get a great experience, but it's less personal. Right? So, and that offers, you know, the advantages of reduced storage, right? So we only need to essentially create small deltas of differences between them. It's easy to manage, it's a good solution, but it's not as personal. So what we're doing is we're looking at a way of being able to deliver... I'm actually just going to the next slide, I think. Yeah, so let's just go through the workflow of how this works, right? So we have a common base image, and it has the common apps. These are the apps that everybody gets, right? So it's your Office applications, right? We create the VM pool, we deliver that down. So this doesn't really matter whether it's a pool disk or a personal disk, right? We create the pool disk, the user logs into their session. Their profile is created on first storage, and it's attached. This is where the VDisk gets attached to their environment, and all of their settings starts getting pushed into this virtual disk, right? So some locally administered apps from their IT department drop down, users go and install Skype and iTunes and all other I need to have my personal apps type applications, different types of browsers and the likes. Some streamed apps come down from AppV, for example, Zenapp Streaming, they get delivered in. We do an image update at the base. And everything changes, but guess what? Those apps stay the same, and they plug back into the operating system. We don't have to re-deliver them. If it's a pooled environment and the user logs in and then he gets a re-image every time, guess what? Those apps are still there. They follow him. They follow that user. If you think of things like Office 365, which they'll talk to you about downstairs, I'm sure, they deliver Office via the cloud. The idea is let's outsource Exchange to the cloud, for example, right? But you still need to have a local OST. This is where you stick your OST in a pooled environment, right? You stick it in there, right? Then you can actually really start to reduce your infrastructure and your costs as the way you move forward, right? This is a really exciting piece of technology, not only just for us, but I think for any IT admin, right? And we're extremely excited about the possibilities that this can do for us, right?
Yeah. The challenge is, up until now, with using pooled desktops and difference disks, is exactly that image update process. It's all great until you want a service packet, and then your difference disk is basically alienated and useless. So with the RingCube stuff, there's an agent installed on your virtual desktop.
VDisk.
RingCube VDisk stuff. There's an agent installed in your virtual desktop that just deals with it. It reassociates. You don't lose it. You don't lose any of your customization, personalizations, or applications. Worst case scenario, if the administrator, let's say as a user, you install Firefox, all right, and then the admin goes, you know what, maybe that should be in the base image, and they install a later version of Firefox that breaks yours. Worst case scenario, either delete yours or upgrade yours. It's not going to break anything significant, right? It's pretty much saying the same thing.
Yeah, it's just really saying the same thing. So it just sort of gives you a look and a feel of how it actually fits together.
Basically, what this covers off is current profile management technologies are that. That's pretty much what it handles now, like our profile management technology and a lot of the AppSense stuff, although AppSense kind of creeps over into the user-based policies as well. It's all down that end of the spectrum. No one's dealt with this end before, the user-installed apps and the corporate-installed apps and all that kind of stuff. The personal VDisk covers everything. It just abstracts every write, basically. There's a file filter clearly in there that's redirecting all the writes out to this personal VDisk, and they just merge on login, and you don't know any different.
There's caveats. It's not, you can't have a virtual image that's XP and jump onto Windows 7 with this, all right? It's file system is to file system, right? So it's Windows 7 to Windows 7 or XP to XP. That's it, right? It's not designed as a transition tool. It's not designed to move between different types of profiles either, right? So that's where you use something like an AppSense, right, in this environment. But where you can see the advantages in your own environment, it's a tremendous tool. So, look, that's us. Open to some questions. Before you all run out, there's a couple of things we need to make sure you do. Please, if you want to win a touch mouse from Microsoft and through the sessions, it's 10 every day, make sure you fill in your forms.
Cool.
If you want to win a Garmin GPS, make sure you fill in your forms. Please put your mobile number on. There'll be a draw on the stand tomorrow, and we'll text you. The lucky winner will be texted. I'm putting my name down. So thank you very much. Has anybody got any questions? Yes?
You're using the Citrix receiver. What about the older online plugin? Is that now gone?
No, it's not gone. And you don't have to upgrade. But all of our... I mean, you can have a plugin from years ago. You will still connect to a Zenapp server. It will still initiate a session. You just won't get all the newest features. You won't get the printing enhancements. Because as you know, as I said, some of this is client-side configuration as well and client-side enablement. So a lot of the multimedia and flash redirection and offloading to local processor, you won't get stuff like that depending on how old your plugin is. So it'll still work.
But the preferred line now.
Yes, you will see. Basically, what we're doing is just everything should be consistent no matter which platform you connect on, right? So if you get an iPad and you go to the Apple Store and look for Citrix, you'll get a receiver. All right. If you've got an Android device, you'll get a receiver. So now when you get a Windows device, you get a receiver. You get a Mac device, you get a receiver. The client bit is the receiver. That's it. So it's just an alignment thing. Not at all. Fully, nothing's adversely affected whatsoever. Are you referring to the splitting out of the multi-ICA streams and stuff? Two-factor authentication's fully supported. Doing this breaks nothing. Are you talking about from external? Yeah. Haven't tried it with the new one. I mean, it was only released last week. I don't. If there are any problems, raise them. But I haven't heard of anything yet. I can't answer that unequivocally, though. Yes, there are. So the question was, are there any plans for a receiver for the BlackBerry Playbook? Yes, there is. Not yet. It's being worked on. It's being worked on by guys in Sydney that work on the same floor as we do, just down the hall. So we've spoken to them. They've given us a demo of it. So it's there and happening. It didn't look too far away, but it's not released yet. And I'm not aware we've announced a release date for it yet either. But it's coming, definitely.
Yes.
Okay, good question. The question is, what's the upgrade process from 6 to 6.5? It's a migration process, it's not an upgrade process. So you would have seen in the first couple of slides, there's a migration center tool that's provided. So basically that'll suck all the settings out. You build another environment alongside and you suck your settings back in. Now, as I said, I've been doing the Citrix consulting thing for a decade or so, and I did zero on-site upgrades. No in-place upgrades whatsoever of any XenApp environments. It just wasn't the best way to do it. Your administrators usually end up collecting a lot of garbage and there's misconfigurations and stuff and your SQL database gathers crap and gets corrupted. And you know what? Just ditch it. Start again. It's always the best way to go. If you're going to go through the pain of an upgrade, just do it properly, really. So it's a migration, not an upgrade. Do it slowly. Seriously, no, I've done big environments. I haven't done a 1,000 server environment before, but big environments, do it in stages. It's just roll them over. So with our web interface, you'll know that you can aggregate environments in one portal and web interface, and you can, as you migrate applications over. So I don't know if you've got applications that are siloed into silos of servers and stuff, but that was a traditional way years ago to do it. If you're still doing that, pick a group of apps, migrate them across, aggregate them into web interface, hide the legacy ones, and just do that stage by stage by stage. It depends on how your current environment's architected, but I would do it. Sorry? Do we have any what, sorry? I don't have any stats. I mean, we have support guys that probably keep stats. I don't know particularly on stuff like that, but in my experience, the biggest challenge in doing any kind of Citrix upgrade is usually the application compatibility bit of it. And that's because we're doing the new version of XenApp goes on top of a new platform. So when 2008 R2 came out, we're now running on a 64-bit platform. That's probably the biggest hurdle people are getting over right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just ask around the thing down at the trial, I understand.
Yes.
Can that be changed to production?
Yeah. It's a license key. Yeah, so if you buy a license, you'll just get another license file to download, stick it into your license server, and you are licensed. There's no difference in the code at all. And that's actually true from if you want to upgrade from the free edition right through to platinum, there's no difference in code whatsoever. It's a license file. Yeah. We're good. Thanks, guys. Really appreciate that. Fill out those forms. Thanks for staying through bare o'clock. It was really good.